Yeah. All right, so let's tackle the right speech. And on this one, we're actually going to focus on idle words and abusive words. The rest we're not gonna treat. You know, the avoidance of lying words. We avoid those, but in other times we definitely will want to put them into use and engage them. In fact, there's a lot of really fantastic times or opportunities where we need to use them, and we absolutely should. You know, like if the police knock on the door and say, "Is anyone home?" You should say, "No." That's great. How many people are in your house? I don't know, even if you do know. Or you could say, "Just me," you know, when there's 10 other people in there. Or, "You have any Jews in your home? Have you seen any?" No, not lately. Except that one guy down at the market, you know, has the long beard and the weird hat. That guy. But he's, you know, down there. Okay. There's times where you're going to need to, you know, use your intelligence and work with that. For God's sakes, we're not Puritans, so don't get so hung up on this. It's not lying if somebody that you don't really know says, "Hey, how you doing?" You don't have to tell them, "Horrible. I'm having a shitty life. This is..." You don't... No. That's... Don't do that. So it's fine to just say, "Yeah, I'm great," and move along. My favorite is those of you that maybe go to Costco, you know, they have all samples all the time. And if you walk by them, they want to engage you because they want to feed you this different stuff. And they always say, "Would you like to try?" And I always say, "No." But that's a lie. Of course I want to try it. But I'm not going to, because I'm not going to buy it. So I'm not going to take their sample just because they're passing it out. I have no interest in purchasing it. So I have no interest in actually trying it. But would I like to? Well, sure, yeah, I'll steal all your food. I don't care. But I'm not going to, and I'm going to lie and say, "No, I don't want it." But of course I really do, but I'm not going to, because I just said. But that's just me. Don't take up that practice. It's too much of a trouble. But let's look at lying or idle words instead of lying. Which, by the way, if you don't lie, you'll never be a good politician or a lawyer or anything else. So use it skillfully when appropriate. And then other times, be completely honest and truthful. That's what that means, the avoidance of. Idle words is the big one. It's actually, as far as Buddha is concerned, is more problematic. So what's idle words? It's talking about stuff that's completely and utterly meaningless. It's waste of time chatter. Important. We're not saying you can't just hang out, have some beers, and talk. That's not what idle chatter is. Idle chatter is completely mindless. It means you're not actually listening to the other person, and you're not even really paying attention to what you're saying. That's idle chatter. How do you know if somebody's engaged in idle chatter? Well, here's a good one, because they'll be saying something like, "Yeah, you know, and they were having this sale, and I meant to go and check that out." And you say something like, "Well, what kind of people are they selling?" "Oh, they had all kinds." Wait, what? See, they weren't even paying any attention. Wait, what did you just ask me? See, that's idle. There's nothing really engaged there. Anyone that's high is doing idle chatter, because they have no idea what's going on. They're just making up sounds. I mean, they're talking, but they, like, have no concept of anything, right? Like, an onion? No, man, it's not soup. I'm looking for an onion in there. Yeah, they're gone. So, really, idle chatter has to do with paying attention to your speech. Watching what you're saying, the context of what you're saying, who your audience is, and listening to that feedback. So it's an active speaking and active listening role. As long as you're doing that, you can talk about football. You can talk about whatever you want. If you want to talk about the weather, that's great. But just pay attention. Don't just make noise just to make noise. That's meaningless conversation. But it certainly has nothing to do with, you know, your neighbor says, oh, your lawn looks terrible. And you know, yeah, I didn't put any fertilizer, you know, and get into that, talking about dishwashing tablets or whatever. That kind of stuff, it just doesn't matter. As long as you are completely engaged. Just be engaged in what you say. If you do that, you're going to notice something. Number one, it's not going to make your speech great. The people in this room hang out with me enough that they know my speech is not great most of the time. But I am completely aware of what I am saying. To be fair, I know what I'm saying. And that's what causes them to go, what? What are you even talking about? It's because I'm very, very clear on what I want to say. It's about that clarity. And when you are clear on your clarity, what it will do is it's going to reveal, it's going to reflect where your mind goes. It's going to reflect what you dwell on. It will reflect on the qualities of your thinking patterns. For example, if you're actually racist, it'll come out. You'll recognize it in your speech. Oh my God, I'm like super racist. Or, if you hold the stereotype or don't hold the stereotype, or your mind's always in the quote-unquote proverbial gutter, it'll all come out. You'll catch it more than the other person. You may shock yourself on how you actually talk, more importantly, what you think. And you'll begin hearing yourself. The other aspect to that mindfulness is you will begin to hear the people's response. How they respond to the information that you put out there. You'll begin to pick up on the little things like, did that statement or did that phrase cause them confusion? Did it cause them aggression? Did it cause them happiness? You'll be able to begin hearing those tones in other people's language. And you will begin to see the effect of your speech on your audience. This is the importance of staying away from idle speech. Otherwise, we just talk and we have no idea what we're really engaged in. And we get ourselves in all kinds of trouble. For those of you that pay attention to the media, for crying out loud, there's somebody always being sued or blacklisted for something that they said. I guarantee 80% of those people have no idea what they even said. Or they're, well, I didn't mean it like that. But of course, you know, somebody's out there just looking to capture someone. In idle speech. I don't care about people's idle speech. Most of the time when I meet people and I'm having a conversation, I don't believe anything that they're telling me. Unless we're really thoroughly engaged. I know they're just talking. They're not vested. So I don't have to run to the media and blow it all up because they don't even know what they're talking about. Now, if you get a person and you sit them down and they say something outrageous and you say back to them, let's clarify that statement. Are you saying this and you really believe this? Well, then the person can go, well, no. It's figure of speech, or that's, you know, whatever, and you give them the opportunity to come out with what they're actually saying. The issue with its idle speech works both ways. We have to be careful, because we're in a very dangerous time of witch hunting everyone and lynching everyone for everything that's the most stupid, petty thing possible. Which my personal, my personality or my personal makeup is the more that that happens, the more outrageous I act because of the stupidity of the hunt. I try to show people how absurd they are by saying stuff that's even more outrageous. And they usually go, that's crazy, why would you... And it's like, because your mind is not at all listening. So idle speech is very, very important, which is why it's on this Noble Eightfold Path. So for us, it's dual-sided. Paying attention to what we say and paying attention to what somebody else says. Venerable Tom Graham has a whole system on communication if you're really super interested in how to actually communicate. He spent over 2 decades putting this thing together. And it's an amazing way to communicate. The abuse of words is the same thing. We have to be really careful that we do not misunderstand vernacular for abusive. Again, those of you that have hung out long enough around me know that, what's that phrase, what is it Ellie likes to say? It's a ridiculous phrase. Potty mouth! You talk like a sailor. Well, yes, because I was one for 15 years, thank you very much. And when you're stuck on a boat with, you know, a very small crew like that in tight corners, all kinds of stuff comes out. Look, that's not abusive speech. We misunderstand it because Shakyamuni Buddha also talked like that. He used the vernacular. He cursed all the time. It's in the Sanskrit, the word dukkha. Look it up. It means shitty. Hey, that is the literal translation. It doesn't mean lousy or terrible. No, those kind of words, that's like samsara. Dukkha literally means the thing that comes out the backside after eating a meal. So that's how he talked. Because it got the attention of the audience. Abusive words is when you say something that inflicts damage. Has nothing to do with vulgar. And this is quite misunderstood in the Buddhist community. And I will completely admit that. And you'll probably have a lot of Buddhists out there that, you know, the puritanical ones that have no idea what Buddhism is about, no matter what kind of robes and titles and little medals they have. And they'll go, ooh, he's saying something. They're the ones that are full of it. Abusive language is when you use words to incite or inflict pain or a negative emotion from another person or upon yourself. If you demean yourself, like I'm a completely worthless person, I can't do anything right, then that's abusive. But to say something like, wow, this burger tastes like shit, that's fine. That's not abusive. Vulgar? Yeah, maybe. Vernacular? Absolutely. Common language? Indeed. And we misunderstand that. So we get Buddhists in their fancy little robes with their fancy degrees and their fancy little medals all over their chest, and they walk around talking super soft and pleasant as if we're some kind of freaking hippie cult. Buddha didn't act like that. Serenity does not mean that. Calmness does not mean that. That's why I like to act all crazy when I give Dharma talks. If you've seen enough of my Dharma talks, you'll see me. Ah! Well, yes. Because it's not about sitting there like I'm some kind of serene statue in a freaking garden. That's not the look of enlightenment. It's certainly not the look of moksha, of liberation. So we have to understand what we're talking about in here when the Buddha says this noble, this profound eightfold path. And when we get to the topic of language and speech, we have to be very careful that we are actively listening and we are clearly aware of what we are saying, refraining from mindless chatter, which is actually what idle speech really is supposed to be translated as. This is a poor translation, I admit it. It's supposed to be this mindless chatter. In abusive language, we are talking about abusive words. It means, like, if you call somebody names, that is negative. You should not do that. You should not refer to somebody in that way. Like sometimes you see these fights, and somebody will say to their partner, their companion, or their friend, well, you're acting like a... Don't do that. Even if they are, you should not say that. Why? Because you could give them that geist. You could inflict an opinion that they hold on to. So don't do that. And certainly no name calling. The abusive words is also when you bring up harmful topics in a way that's meant to belittle them or make them feel terrible and, you know, that whole kind of thing. That's what they mean by this abusive words. And it's important to understand this. If you're not into, you know, cursing and all that, that's fine. I'm not telling you that you should. I am making it very clear that I'm not going to somehow stop. Because I don't really feel like putting that... I have other places to put energy into. I have other habits to break that I think are actually important. This one, I do not see as important at all. Doesn't matter to me. Especially because everywhere on the radio and every place else, all your music is covered in it. So, in movies, TV... I'm just not concerned. I have bigger karmic fish to fry than how I said I don't like something or I like something. And Double Tongues is the last one in this list, and it also is very, very important. A double tongue, Buddha, when he gives a discourse about this, the way this should be phrased, and Buddha does phrase it later in discourses that talk about this, is say what you mean. It implies to be very, very direct. Do not say you're going to do something without the intention of doing it. Now, this is different than lying. I don't know why, but it is. If you tell somebody you're going to do something, you need to follow through. If you enter into a contract, you have to follow through in the contract. You can't sell somebody a bill of goods. You also can't take stuff back from people. What I mean by that is, if you tell somebody that they have a liberty and then they do it, you can't punish them for it. That's also completely unacceptable. Lastly, don't tell one person one thing and pit another person against them. Now, sometimes you will hear this teaching presented that double tongue is, you tell one person, oh yeah, no, I do like that. And then you tell another person, no, I don't like that at all. And say, oh, that's double tongue. Not necessarily. You have to be careful with that. We don't want to put ourselves or anyone else in boxes. I tell people all the time, I don't like rap. And then I'll listen to rap. Or I'll tell one person I don't, and I'll tell another person I do. That's not exactly double tongue. The reality is, for the one person, if their style of rap is along what I like, then I say, sure, yeah, I like it. If you're listening to Atmosphere and you're listening to Beastie Boys, I'm all in. But then you go to the other side, and I don't know any rappers that by name that I don't like, because I don't like them if that's who they are. And so if somebody's into that kind of stuff, then I'm not into it. But are they like the gangster stuff? I don't need to listen to that. That's worthless. Again, it comes back to paying attention to what you're saying and your audience. Always know your audience. What that means is know who you are talking to. I mean, really know who you're talking to. It's very, very important. I've given this story. I haven't said it for a while, so if you've heard it before, just bear with me. I'm going to be like an old guy and just tell you the same story over again. But I was at a graduation at a university, and there was a guy, you know, comes and gives the talk. And this guy was, he was the dean of the science department. And he was talking about when he was working on his doctorate thesis. And the way he did it, so he's in San Diego, and the way that he did it is he went to the Midwest and he rented a farmhouse to just hang out on a farm and work on his dissertation. If you've ever been in a farm community, the other farmers will drive those 3 or 4 miles down the road to come see you. They like meeting everybody and talking and hanging out. You know, if they're not having to work the field or something, they like to, you know, they have a strong sense of community. It's fantastic. way that the whole thing works, really. But he said one day he'd been there for maybe a week or so, and these two old timers came on a tractor, you know, with their overalls and their big sombreros or whatever you guys call those big hats. And so they come over and they're, hey, you know, they introduce themselves. What do you, you know, the new farmer? And he says, no, I'm just here working on my dissertation for my doctorate. Say, oh, that's great. What are you working on? Oh, well, you know, I'm working on science. Oh, wow, science, that's great. So, like, what kind of stuff? And he's like, well, you know, I'm doing, like, some stuff with lasers. He didn't really want to get into it with them because they're farmers. And so the other one is kind of like lasers, like a laser beam. And he's like, yeah, you know, I do, you know, some stuff like that. And they say, well, what are you doing with a laser beam? And he's like, well, you know, it doesn't matter. It's just, and he's blowing them off. So they leave. And they come back a little while later, you know, maybe another week or so. And they come back and, so how's your, you know, laser beam stuff going? And he's just kind of, you know, it's all right. And they're like, well, you want to tell us about it? No, that's okay. Blows them off. So then as the conversation keeps going, you know, they're hanging out for a while. And one of the old farmers asked him a question, you know, well, why'd you come out to a farm? He goes, well, I just thought it would be like, you know, a peaceful place to come and do all my work and do my research. And they said, oh, that's great. And he says to them, so you guys always, you know, did you grow up on the farms out here? And they both said, well, no, we actually got into it much later in life. And he says, oh, really? They say, yeah, you know, we retired from our careers and we decided that we, you know, he works a farm down the road from me. And he says, oh, well, what'd you do? And the one farmer says, well, I was the dean at Harvard of quantum mechanics. And he goes, oh. And the other guy says, yeah. And I oversaw the aerospace science department at Yale. Oh. And then they said, yeah, so if you have any questions about your little laser beam projects, give us a call. And he's like, yeah, I just might do that. And the one guy said, yeah, because we, you know, developed this whole project using those for, you know, a guidance system and blah, 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 and that was put into use by NASA. And then they left. And the guy giving this lecture was like, and I felt like the biggest ass in the world. Because here I was talking in a condescending manner to these guys that were way beyond my field. You have to know your audience. Don't talk at people. Don't talk over their head. And don't talk under them. Engage them as actual people. So he could have started to explain and say, well, do you know anything about? And they would have said yes or no. And then the conversation could have just naturally flowed. Instead of looking at them dirty overalls, you know, with their sombreros on a tractor and going, yeah, these guys know nothing. They know how to plant corn and soy. They're not going to know anything about lasers. You see? Right speech is heavily, heavily founded on this concept. If you know your audience, you'll know if there's a need to lie or not. Like I said, sometimes it's very appropriate, other times it's not. You'll automatically know what kind of language to use. If it's a job interview, you're not going to use the vernacular. If it's your good friend, you probably are, because you don't have to be uptight with your speech. Know what it is that you're saying so that you recognize whether you are creating any kind of harm to yourself or to the other, or if your words are encouraging or help them to relax. Because sometimes you can bitch about something and it makes them feel better because they go, wow, I thought I was the only one with that problem. That's the essence of this right speech. Later, when you like look at the five precepts and things like that, you'll see, you know, abstain from lying. Really, it just means use right speech. That's what that precept means. So I hope that brings some clarity on that one. Because I know it's kind of messy, because we come to Buddhism with puritanical ideas. Listen, it's Easter Sunday, so here's a good thing to point out. Buddhism is not influenced by, not founded on, not connected to, in any way, Judeo-Christian belief system. We don't share anything with that religion. Nothing. There may be some things that are similar, might look the same. We may even say, oh, we share the same universal truth as this, but not really. It's about the same as we painted our house blue, and the guy down the street also has a blue house. It doesn't mean it came from the same paint bucket. Don't bring those concepts over. You have to be careful of that. If you do that, you are going to limit the freedom, the potential for freedom that Buddhism is trying to teach. Buddhism has its own limitations. Just take those and leave everything else alone. Don't share stuff like that. You're weighting yourself down. Buddha said that all the time to people coming from much more strict Hindu lines that wanted to come and be his follower. He says, you spend so much time fettering yourself with your own, with the stuff that I'm not even teaching. There's no such thing as a Puritan in the Buddhism. Look up that definition if you're not really clear on what it is. It doesn't even come from that religion or even that region of the world. No Quakers here. So be careful with that. Understand right speech from the Buddhist point of view, not your society or your past religious views, because those do not reflect the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. That's an important concept to keep. You must remind yourself of that. We have to be careful what parts of our culture we infuse into Buddhism. We do not want to say things that Buddha did not say. That's not right speech. We don't want to promote attitudes or philosophies that the Buddha himself did not uphold. That would be the opposite of doing our best. So, I hope that talk on right speech was helpful. And let's jump over to some meditation.